From Punxsutawney to Reading, Saxonburg to Waynesburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, infrastructure. It is dominating the debate in both Harrisburg and in Washington, D.C. Carl Marrera of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to lead a Capital Watch roundtable discussion on infrastructure with Rebecca Euler and Joe Butzer of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. And revisionist movements like the 1619 Project and critical race theory, which rewrite history to fit contemporary social norms, are dangerous because it is important that we learn from the past. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Carl Marrera and our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania State Treasurer Stacy Garrity announced recently that fiscal year 2020-2021 was the best in nearly 30 years for the PA 529 College and Career Savings Program. According to the Center Square, the program added 25,004 accounts during the last fiscal year, bringing in more than $732 million in total contributions. The PA 529 College and Career Savings Plan offers two different ways to save for continuing education. Both offer tax benefits for contributors, including deductions on state income tax and no taxes paid on withdrawals for qualified education expenses. To learn more, go to pa529.com. That's pa529.com. The share of Pennsylvania workers employed by local, state, and federal governments was 11.7% prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. That ranks it among the second lowest percentage among the 50 states. This according to a new study from the website 24/7 Wall Street. The nationwide average of workers employed by government stood at just under 15%. State Auditor General Tim DeFore has found that more than $3.3 million in transportation reimbursements to the Erie School District cannot be audited. In an audit of the school district, DeFore said there was a lack of supporting documentation that prevented the reimbursement fund from being audited. School districts receive a state subsidy for providing student transportation. They are required to report supporting data to the Pennsylvania Department of Education to qualify for reimbursement. DeFore said his findings do not mean the district is not eligible for the funds, just that the accuracy of the district's submission could not be verified by his auditors. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Congress is working on a massive infrastructure bill, and here in Penns Woods, efforts are underway to determine how to pay for future transportation needs. Here to take a close look at the issue is our Capital Watch crew. Sitting in for regular host David Taylor is Carl Marrera of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Carl is joined by Rebecca Euler and Joe Butzer of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Carl?
Welcome to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, Carl A. Marrera, the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And this week, we're talking infrastructure. We often think of infrastructure as just roads, bridges, highways, byways, parkways, but roads and bridges are just a part of what makes up our American infrastructure. Other key aspects of infrastructure are found in ports and waterways, air transportation, electrical grids, pipelines for water, natural gas, or other liquids. And in today's economy, connectivity networks such as broadband and high-speed internet, even wireless services. But there's a debate raging in Washington, D.C., and throughout all 50 states about what really is critical and necessary government spending on infrastructure, and most importantly, how to pay for it. Joining me on the program is Rebecca Euler. She is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and Joe Butzer, former chairman and former interim president and CEO of the same association, the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca and Joe, welcome to Capital Watch.
Thank you, Carl. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Rebecca, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the trucking industry in Pennsylvania and why transportation infrastructure is so important to your association, your members, and what you do.
Absolutely, Carl. Thank you. Yeah, trucking is one of Pennsylvania's bigger industries and, as you know, critical to our economy. We have over 320,000 trucking jobs in Pennsylvania that support about 37,000 trucking companies. So, in fact, about 1 in 16 jobs in our state is related to trucking. And a little bit about these businesses, 97% of them have less than 20 trucks and 91% have fewer than six. So we're really talking about small businesses that support our economy. And I'm sure you'll appreciate this, Carl. 96% of manufactured tonnage in Pennsylvania is transported by truck. That's over 400,000 tons a day. And 88% of our communities here in Pennsylvania depend exclusively on trucks to move their goods. So they really are essential to our economy. They also pay their fair share of Pennsylvania taxes. About 40% of all highway taxes come from the trucking industry here in Pennsylvania, despite the fact that they only drive about 9% of the miles in our state. They pay over $16 billion in wages in Pennsylvania. But most importantly, as I said, trucking keeps our economy running. It's critical to many other industries, manufacturing, agriculture, warehousing, supply chains, essential consumer goods distribution. They all depend on trucking in every corner of the state. And of course, this was most illustrated last year when the COVID shutdown, affected almost all of our businesses. But truck drivers kept going and kept our economy moving and continue to do so every day to day.
Well, with regard to transportation funding, and this is really for both of you, I'm going to start with you, Rebecca, but how did we get here with transportation funding, and why is infrastructure spending such a critical issue now?
Well, a couple reasons. I'll start out here. At the federal level, the fuel tax has not been raised since 1993. And of course, trends since that time, cars are more fuel efficient. We have some more electric vehicles on the road, and the cost of infrastructure projects has increased exponentially. So this has created a continuous shortfall in funding that's been available to states through the Highway Trust Fund that Congress has had to address by scraping funding together every year, essentially for highways and bridges. At the state level, and Joe will recall this, having been involved in PMTA for a while, the fuel tax increase that was a result of Act 89 of 2013 made Pennsylvania, at the time, the highest gas tax in the nation. And we're still second. So that was to raise funding to solve our infrastructure crisis. But I'll let Joe explain what happened with that funding that we all hoped was going to solve our problems for some years.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. The biggest thing with Act 89, my company was in business then. It basically cost each truck that we operated over $7,400 more per year to operate. That's $7,400 a year per truck. You add that up with all the trucks across the state, there's a lot of money there. We're, 8 years later, and they're coming back and saying we need more money? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think part of the problem is that at this point, I believe it's less than half, just not quite half of PennDOT's budget is actually spent on highways and bridges. And the remainder goes to mass transit. A significant portion goes to the Pennsylvania State Police, multimodal funds, debt services and bike paths, things like that. So that takes a significant amount of the funding away from the motor license fund that otherwise would go into roads and bridge construction.
So we maybe don't necessarily have a funding problem, but we have an allocation problem. And I mean, there are solutions being discussed at both the state and the federal level. Can you give us a rundown of the status of some of the legislation, some of the proposals that are out there?
Sure. Well, the one thing that we're looking for in the trucking industry is are funding solutions that are fair and equitable for everyone involved. And we understand we want to pay our fair share. We use the roads. We depend on them for our business and for our services. And we understand we have to pay our fair share. But a lot of the solutions that are being discussed at the national level and at the state level are very concerning because they're going to create inequities. They're going to really harm the industry and harm a lot of industries that are critical for our economy. So at the federal level, this is obviously, we've been here for some time. Congress has been debating infrastructure spending for a while. There's a bill that passed the House In fact, there's an infrastructure spending bill that's set to expire on September 30th. The House passed a bill that would provide about $760 billion in transportation funding and water infrastructure, of which that about half would be for roads and bridges. The Senate is working on negotiating a bill right now along those same lines, and that has yet to be, you know, figured out yet in the Senate. And President Biden has been pushing that initiative quite a bit. But the second phase of Biden's transportation, you know, funding initiative here is the biggest one, and that's about a $3.5 trillion package. But Carl, you started by talking about what is infrastructure. At the beginning of the program here. And that $3.5 trillion package is not just roads and bridges, but it also includes what they're calling human infrastructure, like child care, family tax breaks, education and expansion of Medicare, even things like free community college, paid leave, things like that, that aren't hard infrastructure. And we're disappointed to see that you know, the focus is on funding those types of items when we really do need to address critical infrastructure in the nation.
And at the state level, and Joe, we're going to turn to you, but I want to talk a little bit more, something that's been in the news headlines a lot, and that's the tolling of bridges, potentially. And really, I need to get your opinion on this. Does the tolling of bridges on interstate highways, how does it affect truck companies? And is this really the best way to rebuild bridge infrastructure and funding it this way?
Well, let me start with the second question first. As far as is it a good way to fund infrastructure, the answer is no. Basically, when you're collecting a toll, 20 to 25% of the toll goes to pay administrative fees. So it's costing you 25 cents to obtain a dollar. So you're only getting 75 cents out of that dollar that's going to fund the infrastructure. As far as how it affects trucking companies, I can tell you, being a trucking company president before, we did our best to avoid tolls. We will run around tolls. So if they continue along this path about tolling bridges, we'll find a way around it. The hard part for trucking companies is we can't pass that cost on. We're not getting an extra $10 or $20 to cross a bridge. They don't care. The company wants the product picked up and delivered. That's all they care about, and this is all they're paying. That is the biggest struggle for trucking companies. We have no way to recoup the cost.
Yeah, and I think something that we talk about a lot on this program is Pennsylvania's competitiveness with other states. And in that case, it really sets Pennsylvania trucking companies behind the curve. And we are competing. Those companies are competing every day with trucking companies in other states. So when you increase the cost of doing business on a Pennsylvania trucking company, you're stacking the deck against them.
Well, you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, Carl Marrera, and joining me is Rebecca Euler of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Joe Butzer, the former chairman and longtime member of the same organization. We're talking infrastructure, more specifically transportation infrastructure, and what are the best policy practices at the state level? And Rebecca, you touched on state competitiveness, but bridge tolling and really just tolling and extra fees in general is going to affect the kind of the greater business competitiveness in Pennsylvania. How so, and how important is this?
It is vitally important. And just to back up, I think we didn't actually talk about what the governor's proposal is, what PennDOT is proposing with bridge tolling. They are proposing to toll 9 interstate bridges in the Commonwealth through a public-private partnership program, which it's kind of, you know, very frustrating because they approved the tolling of 9 bridges, the P3 board, the public-private partnership board at PennDOT, way back last year before they even announced the bridges to be tolled. So it was approved by this state board before the bridges were announced. The 9 specific bridges were announced earlier this year. And it just is amazing to me that the localities, the businesses, the individuals in those communities where those bridges are located didn't find out that this was moving down, you know, the process until after it was very far along. So those businesses in the regions around those bridges are going to be severely impacted by these tolls. To take a trucking company, for example, they originally stated that these bridges would be tolled at about $10 to $12 per crossing for a truck. So a trucking company that operates, and our typical trucking company has about five trucks. A trucking company that operates close to one of these bridges and has to cross. So, for instance, in the situation where Joe was saying to do a run out of state, it's going to add $31,000 a year to their annual costs. And this is a very competitive industry. They're competing against companies just over the border in Maryland or Ohio or New York. And $31,000 a year is going to cut them out of contracts. So those contracts that they're not going to get are going to mean that they may need to cut employees. They may need to cut our working hours. They might not, make it as a business, in which case the local communities will lose, trucking services for manufacturers, farmers, for local businesses. And the costs are going to go up for all of those businesses surrounding each of those bridges.
There are some funding proposals and some spending proposals that are being floated around. And I want to get to those, Rebecca. But first, I want to get from Joe. That PennDOT says that they need $9 billion, which is more than double their current highway and bridge funding. And that would put Pennsylvania near the top of all states when it comes to highway funding. You looked into some detail about PennDOT's budget compared to other states. And what did you find?
Basically, when you take it down to per lane mile, in other words, according to the Federal Highway Administration, PennDOT always says that we have more roadways than New York and all of New England combined at 40,000 miles. That is a true statement, but it's not completely true. When you compare lane miles, Pennsylvania has 251,000 lane miles. New York has 240,000. Ohio, 262,000. And you take those budgets of New York, Ohio, even Michigan, they're all about $5 billion a year. So the question really becomes, if New York can do it, Ohio can do it, Michigan can do it, Illinois can do it, why does Pennsylvania need $9 billion more to fund their bridge and roadways when every other state does it for $5 billion? It just doesn't make sense.
But we also do know that there is revenue that is needed. And from the perspective of trucks, what do you think is the most efficient way to collect taxes for that critical infrastructure?
Well, currently we have, and there's a lot of talk about the increase in fuel economy for cars. I can tell you as a truck owner, my fuel economy for a truck, it may have increased from 5.2 to 6 miles per gallon. It hasn't changed for diesels all that much. So if you want to talk about cars, that's one side of it. You talk about trucks, I mean, our fuel economy hasn't changed. Increasing the diesel fuel tax, which should have been done at the federal level, is the most efficient way to do it. Everything, all the infrastructure, and infrastructure is probably a bad term to use, but all the administrative costs are already there. Every dollar that you increase or every cent that you increase, the fuel tax goes right into the funding of the infrastructure. So there's no additional cost, no additional overhead. It's already there. If you want to talk about cars and the potential, and I say potential for electric vehicles down the road, which I believe is quite a long ways away, that's a different conversation. But you can't take the trucks and the cars and put them in the same bucket when you're talking about fuel taxes. Fuel tax is the best way to fund infrastructure.
Rebecca, there's a commission that has a report. There are policy recommendations. At the time of this recording, nothing is final. But I mean, to be quite honest, at the time that our listeners might be hearing this, some of these things could be final. But there's a draft report out there talking about funding, talking about expenditures. Give the listeners some background on this and what's floating around out there.
Sure. In March, Governor Wolf signed an executive order that created the Transportation Revenue Options Commission and appointed me a member. I think it's about a 42-member commission with various, interests involved. And we have been working through various funding options over the past couple of months for transportation infrastructure. Now, I'll stop and say, the premise of the commission was to find the $9 billion that PennDOT says it needs. And you already heard from Joe, that we have concerns about, the actual real number that might be a little bit more attainable than that. But basically, we were given a list of taxes and fees that we could choose to recommend raising to get to the $9 billion mark. And it's disappointing to me because we just received a draft report, which actually, you know, I mentioned the list of taxes and fees, actually just sort of selects all. So it kind of just said, well, we'll just raise them all, with the exception of, you know, broad based tax like personal income tax and corporate net income tax. They did not recommend raising them, but pretty much everything else you can imagine is on the list of taxes to raise. So I've raised some concerns about some of these issues. I think that this TROC, as they're calling it, Transportation Revenue Options Commission, the TROC was a missed opportunity. I think it would have been a great way to talk about some of these options and what some of the pros and cons are of them. But unfortunately, we're just left with funding recommendations here. But as an example, some of the things that are in the draft report is a mileage-based user fee, and Joe talked about how the fuel tax is the best way to collect revenue. This would recommend transitioning us to a mileage user fee at some point in the future, within the next decade or so. So you'd be paying a tax on every mile you drive, no matter what kind of car you have or truck you have, and that's fine. I mean, we can discuss that in the long term, but the actual amount of the tax that they're proposing is 8 cents a mile, which is four times what we currently pay in fuel tax. So that we got to talk about. They're also proposing corridor tolling, and we just explained how we feel about tolling. Vehicle registration fees, they're proposing to double. A fee on Uber and Lyft. Vehicle sales tax increase. They're also proposing to increase the gas tax immediately in order to index it to inflation. So that would mean about a 20% increase in everybody's gas tax, even in the short term. And I think that comes as a surprise to a lot of people. One thing I thought was interesting is an ad valorem vehicle tax. So they want to tax everyone on the what their vehicle is worth. So not the impact that it has on roads and bridges, but actually how much your vehicle is worth. That was an interesting one. And one more I wanted to highlight real quickly is a goods delivery fee. So a flat fee that everyone would pay on a product that is delivered to their home by, an online purchase or something along those lines. So these are a lot of issues that we got to deal with. I look forward to them getting into the legislature, where I think is the appropriate place to discuss, you know, tax and fee increases like this, not a commission like this. And I'm looking forward to continuing that discussion later.
Well, Rebecca and Joe, thank you so much for joining us on Capital Watch. Where can the listeners go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and the work that you're doing?
Sure. And they can find a lot of information on bridge tolling and some of the TROC report there. It's at pmta.org.
And you can find out more about the work of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association at www.pamanufacturers.org. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
As a college freshman, I was required to take world history as a foundational course for later political science classes. Interestingly, all these many years later, and I won't say how many, I still remember the first words spoken by the professor. He said, "If you don't know where you have been, you cannot know where you are or where you are going." Those are words all of America should hear today. Largely due to the legacy media echo chamber, we coddle those who are triggered by history, promote inaccuracies and revisions through the teaching of the 1619 Project and critical race theory, and attempt to erase the past through the destruction of statues and historic sites. All of this defeats the purpose of history. As my professor said, you must first know where you have been. And some of where we have been is tragic. But as observed by Sir Winston Churchill, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. That is why it is so important to stand up to the current efforts to sanitize history and rewrite it through the lens of contemporary social movements. During a recent trip to Washington, D.C., I had the opportunity to visit the famous Emancipation Statue in Lincoln Park near Capitol Hill. The statue was nearly torn down during last summer's riots, but it was saved from destruction by law enforcement. The statue depicts President Abraham Lincoln holding a copy of the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing a male slave who is rising up from bended knee with fist clenched and broken shackles. It is a powerful portrayal of a man rising up from bondage and into freedom. According to the National Park Service, funds to cast the statue were raised solely by former slaves. Keynote speaker at the statue's dedication was the celebrated abolitionist Frederick Douglass, who was one of, if not the most prominent African Americans of his time. It is, in fact, a celebration of freedom by those who had been denied but then gained that most basic of human rights. Those ignorant of history attempted to tear down the statue, and those politicians seeking to capitalize on the passions of the moment joined in demanding its removal. Hopefully, it remains standing to remind future generations of the pain inflicted through the horrible institution of slavery. When the left cannot destroy history, it seeks to silence those who speak of its lessons. I witnessed that firsthand recently when a certain group attempted to muzzle an elected official who correctly had pointed out that the same tactics used by the National Socialists in Nazi Germany were unfolding in America today. The official was told such comparisons brought emotional pain to some folks and thus should not be made. However, remembrance of the Holocaust should evoke pain. It was one of the most tragic episodes in all of human history. Further understanding the tactics and psychology of the era that allowed it to happen is vital to making sure that such a thing never happens again. Relatively recent world history is replete with the rise of movements and men who slaughtered millions. Hitler in Germany, Stalin in Russia, Mao Zedong in China. Could it happen here? Yes, it could, if we erase their evil deeds from the history books and fail to learn from the social and political movements that led to such atrocities. With the rise of the woke left and its dominance of the legacy news media and most educational institutions, we as a nation are in peril of losing our history. Removing a statue of Robert E. Lee rather than leaving it stand as a reminder of the nation's purging of the stain of slavery from its fabric plays well on the nightly news, but it deprives us of the opportunity to learn from history. It is vital that we fight to preserve history, the good, the bad, and the tragic, and not cave in to speech codes, allow woke revisionism to be taught in our public schools, or permit mob rule to determine what is and is not allowed to stand. If we fail to do so, we will be doomed to repeat the past. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMCE-FM in Erie, WZSK-AM in Everett, along with 5DRadio.com in Fraser, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.